Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. It's Jesse Green here at the control panels, as always. And today, I'm going to be having a conversation with you about how to have a productive associate in your practice. And this episode is really designed for both the business owner as well as for the associate themselves. So there's a bit of something in here for everyone today. Now, before we get into that particular conversation, just a few public service announcements. For people who are new to our podcast, please feel free to take advantage of these freebie resources. The first one is the Savvy Dentist app, which you can find at your app store of choice. So whether it's the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store, head across and grab it there. It's a free app. It's where we distribute a lot of our content. And of course, you're welcome to grab it and tune in to what we do. Secondarily is the Savvy Dentist Facebook group, which is a dentist-only Facebook group. And it's there for dentists to be able to receive some training, some tips, and some conversation in their quest to create a practice and a life that you love. And so really, that's the ethos of our whole business, is about creating a practice as well as a life that you really enjoy. So many of you will know that our whole efforts in the work that we do as it relates to coaching is to help dentists scale their practice. That's really what we do. It's about transitioning from a self-employment situation to a true business ownership. And in a self-employment situation, really does come back to a business that is key person dependent. And that key person is often the principal. Now, of course, if you want to move beyond that into a true business, a scalable business, we need to transition from key person dependency to being a business that is led by systems and team. And our role as the business owner transitions from being the guy or the girl who does the dentistry all day, every day, to being the guy or the girl that builds and leads great teams that does dentistry all day, every day. And of course, we may choose to do some dentistry in there as well, but it's about that choice, about that flexibility and that freedom. So it stands to reason then, if we're looking to build a team of people who can deliver great care to patients, an integral part of that team is to have a really good associate or associates as part of that team as well. And so this episode is really dedicated to helping the commercial aspects of that relationship bear fruit for everyone. Sometimes if you listen to conversations in various forums or other places, it would be easy to be conceived or easy to think that there's this divide between the associate and the owner. And in actual fact, the interests of each party, the associate and the owner, are very closely aligned, because ultimately what everyone wants is we want to have an associate that is busy and productive. We don't really want associates sitting there twiddling their thumbs. We want them to be busy as well as productive. We want the associate to do work that they enjoy and love and brings them professional fulfillment and satisfaction. And of course, the associate wants that as well. And ultimately, we want everyone to make a living from this. We as the business owners want to make sure we've got, you know, commercially reasonable terms, but the associate needs to make a living too. And so it's really important that if we're going to embark on this journey together as principal and associate, that we understand that we actually all want the same thing. And so it's important to understand that if there feels like a misalignment, the very first thing I'm going to say is open up the dialogue, have a conversation, because I guarantee you that most, like in anything in life, most things can be solved by having conversation and really getting to the heart of the matter. So there are a few things that I really wanted to go through today. I have a couple of key points, I guess. And the first key point that I would say that I look for when I'm looking to recruit an associate is someone who comes with batteries included. Someone who is very happy to be proactive, someone who's very happy to be leading the way, someone who's got the capacity to be engaged and involved with the business as well as the patients. Now, I know that that's just perhaps unique to me, but I guarantee you that just about every practice owner wants to have an associate that's engaged, has initiative, and is proactive in the way they approach things. So if you're an associate listening to this, I guess what I would say is it's clearly as the owner, we're going to be trying to hand things to you. And what we really want is for you guys to be able to take that and run with it. And I guess if there was a mindset around that, I'd say, let's be creative, let's build something. And if it's to be, it's up to me. So let's crack on with a couple of key things. So I think when it comes to business, and I've been an owner as well as an associate, and I think there was a couple of key things that I learned very early on in my career that helped me quite a lot. And I wanted to share a few of those things today. I guess really when it comes to the associate, if there was two core skills that I would really encourage you to develop outside of clinical competence, because clearly that is critical, but I'm just talking about the business side for a second. But there's two key business skills that I would be looking for the associates to think about developing. The first one is the ability to build a book. And what I mean by that is to be able to build a patient base. Clearly, the owners are going to be handing goodwill to you, that you're going to be getting your fair share of the new patients that come through the practice. But what we need and want from you is to be able to take that goodwill, take those patients and retain them in the practice, encourage those patients to generate referrals, and of course, grow an appointment book organically. Now, that's a skill that takes time to develop, but it's a skill that, like any other, you can master with practice. And so while we focus on learning and developing the clinical side of our repertoire, which, as I said a moment ago, is very, very important, it's also just as important to be able to learn how to build your own book. And I promise you that this is a skill that will go through with you for life. Now, I'm not saying build a book so you can take it with you later, because clearly there'd be a restraint of trade issues around that. What I'm saying is learning the skill is a transferable skill. And so it's very, very important that you master that. So I wanted to talk about a few things that would help in that process. I guess the first thing to understand in terms of building a book is that it's really important, above all else, to make sure patients come back. So if there was only one metric I could have in my practice, and yes, I know that's a hypothetical because there's lots of metrics that we do have, but if there was only one metric that I could have in my business, it would be the rebooking rate. And so what that means is how many patients do I see today that leave and make a future appointment? And so it's very, very important that every patient leaves with an appointment booked into the future, because I guarantee you that if you let patients leave the practice without future bookings, it takes so, so, so much more work to be able to get that patient back in, and the success rate is much less. So what goes into booking an appointment? What goes into getting that future booking? Well, the first thing around it is our job as clinicians is to create value for that future appointment. And we must understand that the patients place no more value on dentistry than we place on it ourselves. And one of the things I love about the Australian culture, and this might translate to other cultures from around the world, and we do have a lot of international listeners, so this may translate directly or maybe not, but just bear with me. One of the things that I know about Australian culture and dentists in particular is we tend to play down our achievements. We have a sense of humility, which is both really, really charming, but can be, when taken to a higher level, can be a bit detrimental. So when a patient pays us a compliment, we tend to downplay it. When we do really good work, we tend to not acknowledge it, and all those other sorts of things. And so it's easy for patients to feel that dentistry is less important than it is if we don't remind them of its importance. And so what I mean by that is it's really critically important for us as clinicians to build value for the work that we've done today, as well as for future and upcoming work. And so when we're building value for the work that we've done today, it's if we've done a restoration today or something like that, it might be, Bob, it was fantastic to see you today. That restoration was deeper than I expected it to be. Clearly, if we'd left it any longer, it could have caused you some grief. So glad, as I mentioned, that we got it done today. Now, the issue, Bob, is that the cavity on the other side of your mouth might also be bigger than I expect. And so I'm a bit anxious about leaving that too long, because I definitely don't want you to have a problem. It's important that we get on top of this as quickly as possible. So in a moment, I'm going to walk you out to the reception, and I'd like to get that booked in now so that we've got it covered, because, you know, when these things play up, it's just not fun, and you definitely want to avoid that. So that's me building value, because what that means now is that Bob has a compelling reason to come back. And a compelling reason to return is a fundamentally important skill to master. And I'll touch on that in just a moment in a bit more detail. But again, once we've taken Bob to the reception, I then repeat a version of that conversation to the receptionist. And it's essentially saying to the receptionist, yeah, Mary, Bob's done very well today. He's been an absolute trooper. The cavity that we did today was a bit bigger than expected, but he's come through with flying colors. And I'm so glad we did it, because if it had gone any longer, it might have caused him some issues. Now, Mary, the issue is he's got another cavity on the other side of the mouth, and I'm anxious about where that's up to. So I want to get that in as quickly as possible. Could you please work with Bob to find a time that suits? I really don't want this to slide. It's important. And so what happens then is now Mary, the receptionist, has the moral authority to book that. She's much more empowered to book that appointment for Bob than if I just kind of let Bob go to the front desk by himself, and then Mary's trying to figure out what's happened. And Mary, if you're listening, the reception team, if you're listening, is your job is to say, ooh, okay, well, we better get on to that and to go and build onto that conversation as well. Now, just as a small minor point, a bit of a side note, I know this conversation or the comment around this conversation comes up all the time about privacy in the waiting room and all the rest of it. I need to tell you that I've never ever had an issue with that in our practice. And what I do is I position myself between Mary and Bob. I turn my back basically to the rest of the waiting room, and I'm speaking in a way that my voice projects away from the other people. So just to address that, because there'll be someone listening to this podcast in the car going, yeah, Jesse, but what about this? So there you go. There you have it. So really, when it comes to retaining a patient base, we've always got to be giving people a reason to come back. And I've just given you an example of what that might look like if Bob's midway through a treatment plan or whatever. But it's really just as important if we're going through a recall process as well. And so we have a process where we call it the compelling reason to return. And ultimately what that looks like is in the exam, I'm again giving the patient three compelling reasons to come back for their 6-monthly recall. Now, your patients might be very good at remembering things, but over the last 20 odd years, I've found that patients are busy. They've got enough in their mind, and sometimes they forget the details of the things that we tell them. So I'm always giving them three solid reasons to come back for their 6-monthly exam and clean, their recall exam, preventive maintenance, whatever you want to call it, because they might forget one, they might forget two, but rarely do they forget all three. And so we want to tell them the three things that they're coming back for. And so just as an example of one of those things, we might say, Mary, you might have heard me mention there's a crack on the lower right molar. Now, the problem with a crack, of course, is it could propagate. If it propagates, that means that there could be the risk of the tooth breaking or an infection starting within the nerve. So when I see you in August this year, what I'm going to really need to focus in on is the stability of that crack. And if it's stable, that's great. But if it's not stable, then we might need to look at something like putting a crown on the tooth or whatever it happens to be. So that's the compelling reason conversation. And I would do that with three different clinical scenarios in the mouth. And of course, what then happens is it's easier now, once again, for Mary, the receptionist, to be able to book an appointment and know that that's happening. So coming back to the ability to build a book, the first step of building a book is to retain everything that you've got. And the way you retain everything that you've got is, as we've just discussed, to build value for the work that you've done, build value for the upcoming appointment, and to then pre-book that appointment. It's fundamentally important. So step number one in terms of building a book is to be able to retain what you've got. Step number two of retaining a book is being able to provide a great patient experience for our patients. And of course, that comes back to clinical things, but it also comes back to, I guess, a more generalized customer journey. And that means understanding that patients can't understand much about our clinical work. They're not sure whether our work is good most of the time, unless it hurts or feels rough or something like that. But by and large, they're not in the best position to judge the quality of our restorations. They don't really care about the cusp fossa anatomy, perhaps. They may not care about the beautiful anatomy that we've put into things. They may not care about various elements of our clinical care. but they do care about how they were made to feel during the appointment. So what we want to be able to do is firstly to create an excellent patient experience and earn the right to ask for referrals down the track. So first and foremost, it's about retention. Part of that, of course, is going to be the value and so on that we discussed. But a huge part of that as well, and something that we can then leverage off, is the patient experience clinically and from a customer journey perspective. And remembering that people refer to those whom they know, like, and trust. And so it's really, really important as an associate that you build that know, like, and trust factor into the work that you do. So part of the knowing, liking, and trusting is understanding a little bit about the patient, their personal life, their relationships with other family members, where they've got kids, dogs, all that sort of stuff. The likability, of course, comes back to being able to engage with someone on a personal level. And trust, really, you know, we've got to look at the ABCs of trust, and that's ability, behavior, and character. And I guess one of the things that, even though this is a business podcast, one of the things that erodes trust very, very quickly is treatment that fails. So we need to make sure that we are indeed doing great treatment. So again, building a book, we've got to retain what we've got. We've then got to be able to create a great patient experience so that our patients feel compelled to refer to us. And then, of course, we've got to be able to figure out a way to ask for a referral. And we have a framework for that in the training that we do with our clients. And in essence, it's about setting up that patient to provide feedback at the end of the appointment. So, Bob, at the end of the appointment, would it be okay if I ask you for some feedback? I'd really want to make sure the appointment's good for you, but I'd also really like to check in how the appointment goes. Is that okay? And then at the end of the appointment, Bob, I mentioned at the beginning of the appointment that I'd ask for some feedback. Would you mind letting me know how the appointment was? And of course, if Bob tells us something negative, that's instructive, but hopefully Bob says something nice and you say, Bob, thanks so much for those kind words. I really appreciate the feedback. What you might not realize is that we're primarily a referral-based practice. And, you know, look, we don't take on just anyone as a patient, but I'm glad you've had a good experience. I've certainly enjoyed looking after you. So if you happen to have any family and friends you'd like to send along, we'd be more than happy to look after them on your behalf. Here's a card that you might like to hand out to them. Very, very simple. So again, coming back to building a book, retaining patients, and then being able to ask for referrals, getting word of mouth, being able to stimulate those at will is a core skill that I think every associate should get good at being able to do. So I mentioned to you earlier that all this comes back to a few key metrics. The first one, as I mentioned, if I could only have one metric, it was the rebooking rate. But the second one I'd be looking at is how many times are we asking for referrals? Because ultimately, the more we ask, the more we'll get. And I think, again, I would really encourage associates and owners to develop that training into the practice so that as a team, we're all doing this together. So moving on a little bit from there, I wanted to mention a few different things. The second core competency that I would talk about is the ability to generate revenue. So the first core competency was to build a book. The second core competency is to generate revenue. So there's a few things I'd like to share with you around that. So just before we do get into generating revenue, I know someone listening to this podcast might be thinking, oh, but Jesse, I just want to do good dentistry. I don't really care about the money. I'm just here to provide great care to patients. And I understand how people feel and how they might think that way, and I get it. But what I'm going to say to you is that's cool, and we still need to do it in a commercially viable way, because ultimately, if the business doesn't make money, that arrangement is not sustainable. We need to make sure that everyone is winning, as I said earlier, because if everyone's winning, that's great, but if everyone's not winning, then no one's winning. So I wanted to talk about, firstly, being alert to opportunities. I was talking to a client the other day, and he was expressing some frustration at the fact that a patient had come in for an emergency. They were booked in for half an hour, and the associate had said something along the lines of, look, I've got half an hour, you can either have your exam or I can attend to the emergency. Now, what happened, of course, was immediately after that appointment, there was some free time for lunch, and immediately after lunch, there was some free time because there'd been a cancellation or something in the book. And so rather than thinking, can we do both of these things, the dentist, it wasn't deliberate, it wasn't being slack, they just weren't alert, they weren't thinking. They didn't think, oh, okay, well, is there a way that I could do the examination as well as do the emergency and take care of the emergency? And that would have easily been handled by moving the lunch break a little bit later. And we've seen it in lots of other cases as well, where patients will come through the door for a particular service or whatever it is, and they'll be looking to come in for an exam down the track, and we could have done it today. And so, again, just be alert to opportunities, be alert to things in the notes that might have come up in the past. Maybe the patients had expressed an interest in whitening in the past. Maybe the patients had expressed an interest in veneers. Maybe the patients had expressed an interest in whatever. And I think it's worth going back through the notes to see what's been discussed in the past, just to bring those opportunities to the surface again. Now, that doesn't mean that every patient is going to accept every opportunity, but I think it's a conversation that you can have. But if you're not alert to it, then you'll not have the opportunity to have it. And the simplest way to remain alert to that is by bringing it up in the morning huddle and being prepared for that. So again, being alert to those opportunities is going to be key. One of the things that I also wanted to talk a little bit about was the three ways to increase revenue. There are really only ever three ways to increase revenue in a practice, and in fact, in any business, not just a dental practice, in any business. The first way is to see more patients, or if you're in general business, see more customers. The second way is to increase the frequency of transaction, and the third way is to increase the size of the transaction. And really, I guess my point in telling you this is, if you can think in those three categories and make small changes in each of those categories, then I guarantee you that you'll get big results, because small hinges do indeed swing big doors. And so one of the things I wanted to share with you is that seeing more patients, I've mentioned earlier, comes back to the ability to build a book. Increasing the frequency of transactions comes back to managing recalls in particular. There's other things in there as well. But increasing the transaction size, a couple of key things I want to share with you there. One is making sure we've got a really good scope of practice, so we're not limiting our scope to things that are narrow. I'm also making sure you want to practice within your scope of expertise, of course, but I think it's important that we do extend our professional skills clinically so that we can do more at a higher level. And certainly there's a trend to that happening already, and the younger generation seem to be really quite good at that. And so I would applaud them for that, and I'd say that's a really good thing to be doing. But another really key part of that is learning how to present treatment so that it's accepted. What happens in all of that, of course, is that many dentists kind of feel that sales is a dirty word. And so we use the more socially acceptable word, case acceptance. And, you know, I'm not here to argue, you know, whether one's right or wrong. But in my world, we use the word sales, because sales for me is about solving problems. Sales is about engaging with your patient emotionally and helping understand what's going on for them, but getting them emotionally engaged and committed to a solution that's going to solve that problem. And that's really all it is. And so really, we need to be able to learn how to sell. Many, many years ago, when I was a young dentist, I learned to sell because I'd read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And in that book, he mentioned that the number one business skill for anyone on the planet was learning how to sell stuff. And so I got involved in network marketing and was literally doing door-to-door pots and pan sales. And I'd finish up dentistry and then I'd go and practice my sales stuff, because it was that important to me that I wanted to learn how to do it. And so I would say on that note is I did that and learned that just because I wanted to learn that. There was no one paying me, no one encouraging me. I did it all of my own free will. And I guess I want to lead into the concept of mentoring. For many associate dentists, you know, mentoring is an integral and important part of your development. And I think as older dentists or more experienced dentists, we're all really aware of the fact that we probably had some great mentors along the way as well. And we often like to pay it forward. But we also want to understand and have the associates understand that there comes an opportunity cost in that for us. And so I guess one of the things I would say to the associates is, A, we applaud you for being quite interested and engaged with mentoring. But it's also really important to understand that the principal comes with an opportunity cost, in the sense that they could be doing their own stuff. So I think what I'm really trying to say in all of that is that be engaged and interested and responsible for your own learning. And I would say also be prepared to do some stuff for free that might be outside the box. As I said, I learned how to sell by doing door-to-door sales. And I think it was an experience that served me very well. I was a Navy dentist at the time, so I'd get out of my uniform and then get dressed up and off I'd go. It was not something I necessarily am suggesting you do, but it was a really worthwhile and important experience for me. So I think, you know, coming back to all of this is, once we've got the ability to retain patients, once we've got the ability to build a book through referrals as well. And once we've got the ability to monetize that patient base by being able to present treatment and have a scope of practice that means we can get things done, then typically the principal dentist is going to feel quite comfortable handing patients over. And that's really important because ultimately we want to be able to hand patients over, and it's a bit like a relay race. The principal dentist is going to pass the baton and the associate dentist is going to reach behind and grab the baton and run with it. But we can't expect the associate dentist, and I'm speaking to the principals here, we cannot expect the associates to run with and pick up the baton and run with it if we don't pass it well and we don't create the environment for them to be able to do that. So if we're going to pass the baton, there's a few key things I'd like to go through around that. And again, we have a framework for that. It's a six-step framework. And the first part of that framework is to outline the compelling reason. Bob, you've got a crack on that lower right molar. Now, the problem with that crack, of course, is that it could open up. And if it does open up, that could lead to the tooth breaking or indeed some nerve damage there. Now, I think this particular crack is not stable and we need to put a crown on it for whatever reason. Bob, this treatment is really important. It just can't wait. This is where we're establishing the reason to hand over. Bob, the treatment's really important. It can't wait. The challenges that we face is that my next available appointment is not for miles off, and I really want to get this treatment done sooner than that. My strong desire is for it to be done in a timely manner. For that reason, I'd love to introduce you to Dr. Bloggs, and she's an expert at this particular treatment, and in fact, she's my dentist. Or you might say, or in fact, Dr. Bloggs has done this type of treatment for many, many of our patients in the past. And then we'd test for acceptance. How does that sound to you, Bob? Are you okay with that? And then we remove risk and objections. So, Bob, of course, if I have a change of schedule prior to that time, I'm more than happy to treat it myself. But I really just don't want to leave it because if it does break or if indeed the nerve does get infected, it's a major problem that's very hard to fix. And I just don't want to run that risk. So we've got to be able to pass the baton. That's the patient transfer that I'm talking about there, the first part of the patient transfer. And I've got this as a framework, which I'm more than happy to provide you if you'd like it. And so I might put that in the show notes. But then the associate needs to be able to pick up the baton. And to be able to pick up the baton, we need to be able to introduce ourselves and really leverage the relationship that's been created or established by the principal dentist with that particular patient. So you might say, Bob, it's nice to finally meet you. I've heard so much about you. It's great to have a face to the name. And if we're talking about alignment of personal interests, it could be your name came up in conversation the other day and Dr. Green mentioned that you've got a new puppy. I believe it's a Cavoodle. I've got a Cavoodle too. Tell me a bit more about yours or, you know, whatever it is. So he's bound to be curious when I see him next. So he's going to ask me about how you're tracking it with a new dog or whatever, you know, whatever it happens to be, whatever personal comments there might be. So you want to leverage that. He's bound to ask me how you're going. So tell me how is it going, and then I'll report back to the principal. And then clinically, you want to align as well. So before you start, you could do something like last time you were here, you mentioned something to Dr. Green. How is that going? Something being, you know, whatever the content is. Or during the examination, whatever it is, you might say, look, you'll probably recall that Dr. Green was keeping an eye on such and such. Now I totally know why he's keeping an eye on that. You'll probably recall that he mentioned there was a crack on that lower molar. The problem with that lower molar, of course, is if there's a crack, it could propagate. And if it propagates, it could lead to the tooth breaking or the cusp fracturing. Neither of those is good for you, and we've got to get onto it. So the final part of that six-step framework is the result, which is either good news or bad news. And again, it's just about leveraging that. So my point is not so much to teach that framework in this podcast. My point is to illustrate that if we're going to transfer patients, it's not just a case of booking it in. It has to be set up, it has to be choreographed, and there has to be some structure to it. Now, you can use our framework or you can create your own. There's no problem with that. But ultimately, if we're going to hand over patients to the associates, firstly, we want to know that we're confident that that's all going to be good, that they're going to retain the patient, they're going to be able to provide the best possible care, do it commercially, and of course, generate referrals from that. And then once we're satisfied and happy that's all in place, we're going to be able to have a structure to hand that over. So, ladies and gents, as I said, you know, productive associates are an integral part of building a team that allows you to leverage and scale your practice. So we've covered a fair bit of territory, but of course, the two key skills we want our associates to master, firstly, to be able to build a book, and the second skill is to be able to generate revenue. And really, that's what we've covered today. So I hope you find that helpful. There's a fair bit of stuff in that, of course. But as always, please post questions into the Facebook group if we can help in that regard. We're more than happy to. And we'll actually probably post the frameworks into the Facebook group as well, so you can grab them there if you'd like them. In the meantime, for those associates who are listening to the program, I hope you find that really helpful. Your interests and the owner's interests are definitely in lockstep. For the owners in the audience, I hope you find that helpful as well from the perspective of going, okay, what do we need to have in place so that we feel comfortable to be able to hand over goodwill, and what do we need to be able to do to encourage that? Because we all know, as I said a moment ago, that if our interests are aligned, having happy and productive associates works well in the long term for everyone. All right, guys, that's it from me this week. I hope you find that useful and helpful. As always, please jump into the Facebook, keep in touch, or send us a comment and let us know how you're tracking. But in the meantime, have a good week, and we'll talk soon. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.